This is Philosophy versus Improv, where two sages try to teach each other a thing or two, and maybe you, the audience, get something out of it as well.
Hey there, this is Mark, your normal host of the show. I just want to say a few words to kick things off. This show is about experimentation. For the Partially Examined Life, we have our standard group of people, our standard way of doing things. You pretty much know what you're going to get. But in this show, I try to surprise myself. I have unusual guests. I try to draw on the well of philosophy I've learned over the years to make points as they seem apropos at the time, as opposed to preparing something. The very foundation of the show means that I and my co-host are going to have conflicting agendas, different aesthetics. We're very different kinds of people, Mary and I. And as an experiment today, as a way of challenging myself to not be a control freak, the body of this episode does not have me in it at all. Not because I needed a vacation. I did curate this. I arranged this. But I kind of wanted to see what Mary would do in my absence. And also, since she got along so well with Partially Examined Life / Philosophy Improv fan favorite guest, the philosopher Jenny Hansen, here is their initial attempt at a version of this show that actually passes the Bechdel test. So let's see what you think of this, and I'll have a few more words about it at the end of the episode.
Welcome, everyone, to this very exciting special edition of Philosophy versus Improv. I am Mary Hines, and I'm bringing all the improvisational prowess and practice I'm able to, and I'm joined by a very special co-host today.
Hi, I'm Jenny Hansen, and I guess I'm bringing the philosophical prowess today, coming at you from the Pacific Northwest on a beautiful May, almost Memorial Day weekend.
Time is absolutely flying. And I know that we're not just like sitting around twiddling our thumbs waiting for life to happen. Like, how is it already almost June?
I don't know, but I'm not like ready for it because June's supposed to be like chill out time, like barbecue time, like hang out with friends time. And instead, I'm still coming down off the semester. I don't know about you. I don't know if you like teach on semesters like I do, but I'm still like, ugh.
Yeah, like you don't have any time to breathe. Well, I was just counseling. I have so many amazing students and I get a lot of fans that follow me and I move into the role of what I like to call friendtor, which is friend plus mentor. And it also makes me think of a centaur and I am a mythical magical creature.
So I love that.
It's fun to watch this transition into friendtor. And I just had a student reach out to me that was like, oh, actually, I'm going to share some of what she said, because she's anonymous, so she's safe. And she doesn't listen to the podcast, I don't think. She said, taking summer off from comedy and improv, it's all getting to me. The inner judge is killing my work. I made a video and it's not good enough after watching Funny as Fuck with Kevin Hart. My ego is saying I'm not cut out for this. I know it's wrong. I just have to get over it.
Yes.
And she messaged that to me yesterday. And because of my personal boundaries and my self-care, I was not in a place where I was able to be a friendtor. So yeah. I gave it some time because I've learned through my boundaries that it's like, don't respond out of emotion.
Yes.
And when my tank feels empty, it is my responsibility to nourish my tank and be like, I don't have any, whatever's in my cup right now. Yeah. I need to order nachos and watch Sleeping Beauty for my mental health. I need to be a nacho goblin and I need to parrot back all of the character voices in a Disney film. So I responded to her today and I said a few thoughts. And this was great that we had our timing was switched around. So I did my office hours while I was waiting for you. I said, choose inspiration over intimidation. Allow yourself to be inspired and motivated instead of holding yourself up to standards of others with more years, more budget, et cetera, et cetera. Two, I broke it down into one, two, three. Two, breaks are healthy. Trust your gut and let the universe refuel you with inspiration and nourishment. Number three, the process is the product. It's never done and we will never get it right. That is the nature of the work. So I said all of this to say everything I know. And for anyone who's watching this, Jenny just had a big lean back because that was a big truth bomb that you have to deal with all of it. So yeah. I said all that to say that and to really focus on the process is the product. It's never done and we will never get it right.
Right. That's true with writing. Yeah.
I feel like there's a lot of power when we can surrender that it's never done and it's never right. And also having like this grace with yourself and with everyone else. I'm working on having grace with myself and everyone else because everyone is dealing with the stressors caused by our government, et cetera, just as a small example. Everyone is dealing with the stressors in different ways. And I think it's really important to understand that dealing with all of that, I've found it fills up way more of my daily bandwidth of potential on what I can do in 24 hours with worry, stress, fear, anxiety. Like, right. Like the room is full already.
Right. No, I mean, it's damn girl. You're on it. Like saying things that people have been saying to me about filling my tank up or, you know, my spoons are out or, you know, all of the metaphors.
Insert any aphorism here or any adage,
I love the spoon one, though. The spoon one, I think, is I had to help a friend recently who has some disabilities, but he never sort of advocates for himself. And so I was like, look, in these political times, I think ADA protections are probably better than being gay or anything else. So go with ADA. And so we were working on how we were going to convey that he needed to set up these like formally at work. And I looked up the spoon thing, and I don't know why. I think that thing works to help people understand stuff because, you know, everybody's stressed out and like everybody forgets that they're stressed out when they're, you know, administering or doing their work, and they just run over everybody else and forget that there's human beings that are also stressed out. And so, I love any of those metaphors that we can use. You know, I've used up all my spoons today, there'll be less tomorrow, or, you know, or the
I like
tank
to say
isn't full.
When in company where I'm able to be body, I like to say I'm fresh out of fucks.
Yeah.
I'm fresh
so
out of fucks.
Like,
I don't have any
none,
left
no
to
more
give.
Left to give. Yeah. None at all. No. And but in there's some power in that, right? I was just talking to a friend earlier today and catching her up on, you know, all the stresses that we're navigating. But I think because there's a certain insanity of the onslaught of crazy right now, that it kind of like unlocked, you know, thinking about your student, unlocked my inner critic. And I was like, there's nothing I can lose more now, right? There's nothing else to go. So I just am going to go full bore fighting back on this insanity. And that's fun, but it does, it also drains you too. But then you have to like come to a beautiful place like this and try to remember what it's like to look at a sunset or water or something like that.
Sheila, welcome back to my fuck shop.
Yes.
I'm surprised to see you, but this is the second time this week. And I have to tell you, we didn't get our most recent supply of fucks, and I'm out of the normal fucks that you come to get.
Well, what about bullshit? Do we have any on sale?
Yeah. Come back with me into the walk-in.
Okay.
So people haven't really been interested in bullshit lately. So I have so much inventory on bullshit. Let's see. I've got...
it's a good deflector.
I've got some self-image bullshit. I've got some... Oh, I've got a lot of FOMO, if you want some FOMO. Oh, I also have quite a bit of generational shame. And could I interest you in the trauma triggers assortment? You have to keep it frozen, or you're going to get or your trauma triggers are going to get all over your kitchen. You have to keep it frozen. It's not funny, like, Sheila. The business of selling fucks is not. It's the tariffs on fucks is out of control.
I know. And I thought for sure that the Supreme Court wouldn't hold up these tariffs on the fucks, but no, God damn it. The fucks are impossible to come by. So. Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking about the bullshit, though. Another one we can add is how about
I can give you BOGO.
The inner whore critic. I learned that phrase last night watching Margo's Got Money Trouble. Have you been watching this? The inner whore.
Also, I love how fluid this transition was from scene to conversation. That was a seamless transition. Okay, tell me about the inner whore. Do I know her? Is her name Mary?
Margo. No. Well, Margo. We all have an inner whore.
We do.
We
tell
hate.
Me. Tell me. Tell me. Tell us.
Well,
tell us.
I just think, you know, like on top of all the bullshit, one would like to be able to at least enjoy whoring around without trauma triggers or shame, right?
Okay.
Like, you know.
Listen to this. I have something on that. So I live in LA. I'm an anomaly and I don't have a car. And honestly, as I'm watching the current landscapes of things, I'm so happy that I don't have a car and all the associated payments. So I walk a lot. I take the bus. I take the metro. And I'm 6 feet tall. And I'm quite a stunning and beautiful creature. I say that with humility and grace. And when I'm out, people notice me no matter what I'm wearing and no matter what I'm doing. And I wasn't wearing anything crazy, but I'm pretty much always in a spandex suit because the inner dancer in me, like, I love wearing spandex. And I'll wear like a cute like crop, like flowy crop or something.
Right.
Like, but spandex is safety for me and I love it and it fits well. Anyway, so I'm on the bus and I'm always head on a swivel, no music playing. I'm always very tuned in, tapped on to my environment for any trouble or bullshit. And there was a guy who I had already clocked as like potentially transient, did not seem altogether there, had already like, I was already like, click, click, be aware of this guy. Yeah. I have to go close to him to get off the bus. I feel someone touch the back of my leg. I turn around, fist already balled, like ready, because immediately, like, I'm ready, right? I've done it before. I'll do it again if I need to. And I turn around and I go, what? And then he like mimics me and like, what? And I immediately assess in that moment, this isn't worth it. Yeah. I'm not continuing to antagonize the situation. So I put myself on a slight diagonal so that I can have him in my periphery without him knowing that I'm watching him. So this is just an example of me trying to get from my pet sitting client home.
And all of the work you have to do.
And I can't even whore around in safety because someone, you know, so that's, I told my honey about it. I told my boyfriend about it. And he was both proud of me and angry at the same time. He was like, it's not safe to be hot anywhere, is it? And I was like, it really isn't, as a matter of fact. Like, all snarky aside, it's not safe. Like, I always have to be so
especially
careful.
When you got a big brain, you know, like, I mean, yeah, because you are hyper alert. It's like antennae. Yeah.
And it gets exhausting.
It's a burden.
And sometimes on some days I'm like I want to get myself to the gym. But at the end of the day, when it's time for like me things, it's like, God, I don't have the energy to deal with the circus. Like I.
Right. Okay. So you just got me thinking about something a friend of mine said. It's a weird pivot, but it just popped in my head. But
yeah, we follow the fun. We say yes to what shows up.
A friend of mine who has had, like moved to the U.S. from Korea, like in high school, and so now she's here and she works at the college with me. But we sort of formed this little rebellion this year. It's been really fun. We have like swag. But she said to me one day something that I think is appropriate in this situation, which is, you know, everybody keeps trying to get us who are the troublemakers out of the way. But she's like, I'm an immigrant. This is my house. You get out. Right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I was like, oh, I like that because I don't have that moxie. And I wanted to tap into that from her because I, yeah, there's times where I feel like, okay, yeah, self-care, stay away from this, go home, get away from people. Don't flaunt the glory and the, you know, give the gifts to the world of my presence because of all of the
other
crap to manage.
It's so unfortunate to have to think in that way, to like, to be your own resource guard and like,
Well, especially when you're tapped out, because you can really take someone's head off. Like when I'm at the edge, I'm not fun to mess with. I bet.
I like what you said about your friend, and it's something that I've always thought about, but I'm leaning into it more and more. And like the guidance that I gave to one of my students is, we get to choose inspiration over intimidation. And when you see something in someone that you're like, oh my God, that's really cool. Or you're really good at that. Instead of putting it away from yourself, like, oh, I could never accomplish that. What if you could be fueled by it? And what if you could know that whatever you see in someone else, you get to do that same thing as well.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the comparison stuff is hard. Like the advice you gave makes me think a lot about like the time that I thought I would become a yoga teacher. Didn't stick.
And but you still could if you wanted to, right?
Mayhaps, yeah. It was a book I read. It's something like The Body's Not an Apology. You might have heard of this book.
Oh, no, but I love it already.
Yeah. And it's this woman who is, good gracious, I'm talking and I'm grabbing an AirPod.
She's getting passionate, folks. She's flipping AirPods.
I'm flipping, yeah. They're popping out. It's like, but she, you know, one of her points is how toxic it is for women or men to constantly be in a world where they're measuring themselves up to the like person next to them, right? Instead right. of, I mean, inspiration instead of intimidation is like pithily put. I love it. And that's kind of what her point was. But you know, you're just highlighting that we sometimes are our own worst enemies. Mm-hmm. People get funny or they get good at things because they just put in the reps and they do it and they keep going mm-hmm. and they push through the hard stuff. I guess that's true for everything, right? So. Mm-hmm. But yeah, sorry, I'm getting pedantic. We have to get funny again. I'm boring myself.
I mean, sure, getting funny again is great. What what are you working on right now that that is like feels nourishing and exciting to you?
Well, I think I started trying to tell you guys this last time. I really am interested in the way that we are all having to interact with AI. In various ways, it's just everywhere, right? You know, like even just, I'm sure you get like, you know, I have mostly removed myself from social media, but I still get like, you know, ads, like, because I'll play the games on the phone, you know, mm-hmm. telling me how to figure out my perfect haircut because they're going to make an AI, you know, image of me. But all the ways that we have to interact with these AI agents or these AI bots is making us, it has the potential to make us worse because mm-hmm. they only fill us with like maybe a kind of unearned narcissism. Mm-hmm. Not unearned narcissism. That's a weird phrase. But we could maybe take it back. We could maybe turn those AIs into like we should program the AIs to give us kind of moral feedback instead of like it telling us that we're great no matter what we do. And, oh, that's wonderful. Great idea. Totally. Yeah. You know, we need to have these AIs start maybe having their feelings hurt when we yell at them or act frustrated when they don't give us everything we want. So I think I've been trying to think about how can we turn these AI bots that are parroting us back to us into an actual useful mirror that will make us better instead of nurture the worst in us.
Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think anyone is on my side in the tech world. I think they're looking to extract. But maybe there is some good.
We had a guest on recently who was talking about their book, and we got into a conversation around AI, and they were talking about how they were using AI to design different graphic elements to help support pieces of their book. And I'm observing in myself that I have a very strong ethical and ecological issue with AI. Yeah. And I don't think that people truly understand what has and is happening to the entertainment industry that never recovered from COVID. People always said they're like, oh yeah, things look back to normal. And then when it was over, people were like, oh, we're back to normal. No, for some people, but for others, my life has never been the same since COVID.
Neither has education recovered. Yeah.
Yeah. And now with this AI, it's like, I understand the ease aspect. I am so vehemently against contributing to a thing that is tearing apart my industry.
Yeah. It's real.
And I get so emotional about it that it becomes difficult for me to be articulate because I'm so mad about it.
Yeah. I mean, so there's plenty of reasons to be mad. And you're right. There's the ecological footprint too, like the data centers that, you know, the extracting.
I think what irritates me the most is when people say things like, well, it's already happening, so get on board. Or I can't do anything about it. Like, well, actually, you can. And you either participating in it or not participating in it does matter, but it is so easy to be like, oh, I can't do anything about it, so I'm just going to engage with it. Be like, oh. I think diving deeper down into it, the root of that, I think, is folks don't realize how much power they have.
Mm-hmm.
people don't understand how powerful they are in every single interaction, everywhere you go, everything you engage with. So then my mind goes to, okay, Heinz, when I need to rally, I call myself Heinz. I'm like, okay, Heinz, what can you do about it? And what I've been doing about it is doubling down on training as many people as possible to understand their creative voice, to be joyful, brave, and authentic, to counteract the canned quality of of like electronic. And I'm doing everything I can to bolster up your heart, your imagination, going back to all the things that inspired you as a kid. So like I'm on a even more of a mission from God to be
greatest line ever.
Joyful. Yeah, to be joyful. And also Orange bring whip, some Orange Blues Brothers energy in here.
One of the like long-standing things I work on is I have this kind of distinction that I like to make between hope and optimism. And I always pick hope over optimism. You know, you had pulled out your phone. I was thinking of some advice I gave to someone like at 3:46 a.m. this morning when you have insomnia. And it's a person who's trying to use their voice like as a poet and be able to fight back some of the crap in the world. And was kind of being finger wagged by a friend, like, you know, don't stick out, whatever, like the nail that sticks out gets hammered, something
but
irritating
be a tall
like
poppy.
That.
We
like,
need
be
more
small.
Tall poppies.
Right, yeah, right. And I was saying the opposite because this person said, well, you know, I understand your point of view, but maybe I'm just more optimistic. And I wrote back to my friend, optimism is child's play. And I mean that because people
optimism
who say things are going to get
child's
play. It's ridiculous. Yeah. Like optimism is useless. It means you're just going to do nothing and say things will get better because you're benefiting from the hopeful ones. People who are hopeful, they are foot soldiers and they go out there and they do what you're doing or what I'm trying to do to try to fight against this wave that's saying, oh, it's inevitable. We're like, no, hope is what rebellions are fueled on, right? That's why like hope is one of the themes throughout like Andor, best Star Wars series ever,
yeah,
or any, you know, like major writers on rebellion. It's about hope because hope doesn't mean like optimism is just the sense that the world optimizes, that it's going to be better, that it's going to, you know, things are going to work out, right? So I'll just keep my head down. I won't stick out and this will bolt, you know, brush over me. Whereas hopeful people are strenuous. And they push back and they form armies and they nurture each other. And when someone says, I'm an optimist, I always want to say, well, what luxury you have to be an optimist. You're only an optimist and things are only getting better because you're watching the fruits of us who are the foot soldiers that are hopeful.
Or even what are you doing with your optimism? Because
right.
What I'm hearing you say is hope equals optimism applied.
Yeah, it means like that you can imagine a better future, that you're willing to fight for that future.
Ooh,
and
I
that
feel
you're
tingled.
Willing to stake
that
yourself.
Yeah, you're
going to stake yourself. You're going to stand tall. This is where like narrative has nurtured me so much, or theater is, you know, like you're going to, there's so many scenes of, you know, the kind of moment where you're just not going to stand down or, you know, just even like, I would not want to compare myself to the scene from Tiananmen Square or the woman in front of the man in front of the tank. But, you know, I just think like, but I think like.
But pulling from that energy. Yeah. Uh-huh,
yeah. But then we're in this double bind, right? We're back to the out of fucks, having to find other ploys to get people out of our face. Because on top of all the crap and then wanting to, I mean, you're 6 feet. I'm 5'10". I have never met someone taller than me. I'm so excited. Like, wow. You know, because I'm pretty tall, too. I stand up. I face it. I just refuse to be told to just accept this shit. And I think that's what we need is more people that are like,
Miss Marr, please come into my office.
Oh no. Now
Miss Marr, thank you for coming by to Paramount Pictures today. I know you're very busy on set with all of your filming. And I've got to say, we've been getting some of the footage and you just look absolutely fantastic.
Oh,
and the juice cleanse is working really well for you. The glow that's coming from your pores, the camera is drinking it up and
the
we absolutely love it.
The purple eyeballs. Yeah.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And, I can't even say the word.
No, that's okay. It's not important. What is important here is actually... You're actually too beautiful for this production.
Oh, I'm so tired of hearing that.
Well, I don't think we can continue. I know you demanded that you wanted to be the only blonde on set. And we expanded our wig budget to allow you to be the only blonde on set. But now that you are the only blonde on set, that paired with your Amazonian height, I'm sorry, you're just too beautiful. You're just too radiant. Everyone is complaining about how nice you are. And it's a real problem.
But I swear, I worked very hard at maybe yelling a little childishly at a set person the other day. I tried to flex a little.
And I had Steven in my office, and Steven, that actually made Steven's day because he felt called out and celebrated.
Okay. So.
So what can we do moving forward? Because we'd love to keep you as part of the project. We've already filmed so much. And I'm wondering, what can you do to be less? Oh, that's very nice. I don't think I can.
You just... what is that?
Can we get
fire
some cameras
breath.
In
I'm
here?
Trying. I'm trying
we need to get
to
some cameras
this.
In here. Look at this beautiful meltdown. I've never seen claw hands so claw you before. And scene. Something that you were saying made me think of this. I'm loving this conversation and how much we're like nourishing
each
other. My entire life, I've been bullied for being too big, too loud, too much, too joyful. Your smile's too big. Your laugh is too loud, etc. So my whole life, I've been reclaiming what was bullied out of me and what people attempted to snuff out of me. So when I come to these instances, you know, about when someone or something is attempting to take my power away, when you were talking, I realized in me that that's a big fat trigger from the trigger assortment that I bought from the fuck store.
Yeah.
That it's really triggering to me because what's happened, I love when emotions come up. I endeavor to, and I actually shared this advice with another friend who was going through something. And I was like, I endeavor to observe my feelings like a scientist. So when it's happening, I think about the camera panning out and me in a lab coat with a clipboard. And I'm lovingly notating what's happening in the experiment that is my life. And I do my best to observe it from a distance instead of being stuck in the mire of what the fuck.
That's an excellent move. I think one of my strategies. No, I mean, I love
what do
that
you do?
Whole image. Well, no, I was thinking I should try that. But I think what I've started doing now, because I am the one who's, I'm the one who's like in a world that's conditioned to basically be the scientist clipboard, like tamp it down, chick, like, you know?
Yeah.
And I just don't. But I think what I've been doing lately is laughing at people. So like when you just nailed with that sort of perfect satire of you're just too beautiful, you're too loud, you're too nice, you're too good, you know, that's kind of like what I start in my mind imagining that I'm hearing, and I just start laughing at them. I don't know if that's the best strategy. It's a little bit shitty.
Well, the process is the product, right? So that's your strategy now until you get the latest operating system, which updates you to something else, right?
Tahoe
so,
or something. Yeah.
Interesting in terms of my improvisational expertise. The science behind why we laugh is because we see ourselves in something that's being reflected on stage and we go, haha, I am superior. I know what is about to happen. And the kinesthesiology of laughter means that you are soft and relaxed enough that your vocal cords are able to fluctuate to even emit the physical action of laughter. So laughter in and of itself implies safety and release. Yeah. It also creates movement in the body, and movement is what facilitates change and takes us out of stagnation.
Yeah.
I am so brilliant. Woo!
Laughter in hope and rebellion. None of that optimism bullshit. Yeah. Like, get out there.
It's easy for people to push away those, like, the things that bring you joy are an unnecessary accessory. I find it's even more vital to do what I did the other day and get myself my favorite vegan nachos and watch a comfort food Disney movie. Like that, to me, taking that time for myself in that way is me pouring into my cup so I can go in overflow for both myself and everyone who needs me.
Yeah. Well, and I think that like one of the things that I bond with you like so instantly on is the passion we both have to contribute something creative and valuable in the world. But also I think we both have people that really benefit from our energy.
Mm-hmm.
And then we will give it all away, right? So, you know, it sounds like you've gotten much better at figuring out boundary stuff. Like I need to explore vegan nachos. Like I haven't tried that one yet. Like I'm still on the pulled pork one. So maybe if I cleaned it up a little bit.
And sometimes I'm on that too. But here's the thing. We're a pack and we're a tribe. And I was raised with the Waltons, like the TV show, like the Waltons mindset.
Good night, John Boy.
that it's the village, that we're a village. And my mom talks about it a lot, that like, you know, like if you're sick and the cows need to be milked, someone's going to come over and milk your cows. So my mom was venting that she was like, that's over and that's gone. And like, we don't have community anymore. And I said,
build it.
I see how you can come to that conclusion. I offer to you that it is not gone. It has changed and transformed. And now there's like different apps that you can use. There's different meetup groups that you can
use. That's true.
It hasn't gone. It has metamorphosized. It has changed to meet our changing times.
Yeah. But I still think, I mean, you can build community, especially in these times, when you are willing to step out a little bit and inspire other. If people don't get intimidated by you stepping out and saying, this is ridiculous what you're saying. I'm not, you know, like, no, this is crazy talk. No, I'm not going to, whatever. Then I think people will go, huh. And then you find those people and then they become your new village. And then you create the joy to keep getting out and fighting.
And it requires a lot of courage to step out and to be the tall poppy. It requires so much vulnerability.
Yeah.
There's a really great quote that I say often when I'm teaching, and it comes from Martin DeMott, who was one of the founding fathers of Second City.
Nice.
And it is that intimacy means into me, you see. Intimacy means into me, you see.
I love
it
that.
It requires
so much vulnerability.
It requires all of the fucks from the produce section of the bodega to be able to allow yourself the courage to be intimate and vulnerable. And to not care what people think and to surrender what people might be thinking of you. I had an instance with one of my pet sitting clients last week who was a regular client. And I used to have a really amazing relationship with her. She had has a parrot and three dogs. I used to have a really great relationship with the parrot. Something switched hormonally in the bird. And now the bird hates me. But she hates me because I won't let her engage in naughty behavior, like going into the linen closet to nest, that her mother should have never let her do. So even though this bird bit me 5 different times over the 4 days I was there, I'm nervous I'm going to have a... It was so bad. And I didn't share the first couple times the bird bit me with their mom because their mom really needed a vacation and I didn't want to bother her. And I was going to keep working on my relationship with the bird and see if I could improve things. And so even though the bird was doing animal behavior, because animals are animals and animals are animal, I didn't punish the bird by leaving her in her cage the whole time. I still gave her her 2 times a day outside time and outside on top of her cage time. And I wore an oven mitt with a towel wrapped all the way up to my arm, etc. Yeah. And the human, the owner of the animal, said it was my fault that the bird bit me. I should have never let her out of her cage again. when there you are with, and she went on to say, and by the way, while all this is happening, this conversation on the phone, I'm trembling with anger and upset, but I'm staying really calm and cool. She said, when an abusive husband slaps you, you don't go back for more. And I said,
I'm telling okay. you, inner horror I said, problems.
I said, okay, thank you for sharing that information with me. Just because Gladys is having an animal response does not mean I'm going to punish her and keep her in prison. So anyway, that was a small, this woman went on to continue to attack me and be like, I feel like I'm being attacked and da 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 da, which ultimately led me to dropping her as a client, yeah. which then led to her a day later, her saying, you know what, just keep my house key. I'd love to hire you back. It's not a big deal. Okay, so, wow, the bullshit abounds. Can you smell it? It's sticky. So anyway, I say all of that to say it forced me to an impasse where I had to, not even had to, I chose to surrender the narrative she has constructed about me. Amen. And surrendering whatever she thinks about me is not any, oh, I'm getting chills. It's not any of my business.
Exactly.
And I get to not let that bother me. And I get to hold my boundary and move on and allow myself to be misunderstood.
That is it. Be misunderstood. We should make a bumper sticker.
It fucking sucks.
They have the ones like, well-behaved women never make history. Or should be like,
I have a wine glass that has that on it. Yeah.
So well-behaved women are never misunderstood. I don't know. Like, no, that's not as funny. No. Yeah. Be misunderstood. Like, I don't know. Because I think what is so easy to see when you're hearing it, someone else's story and you can see like the whole thing play out.
Oh, from the outside. That, it's 20. I see everything.
And then and you can see, so you can see that what they're doing is they're dumping their insecurities on you and they're
Correct.
Dumping their own like problems on you because you're like, I'm not taking that. I'm not taking
She's
this
taking
from you.
Her frustrations out yeah. onto me because I am the help. Right. And,
yes.
And according to her, I am a safe place to project all of her unworked on personal things and any
right.
frustration she's experiencing to me, and
right.
which is really fucking shitty. And
right.
then it puts me in a place where I literally said out loud, I didn't say it to her, but I'm very spiritual. And like, I said out loud, I was like, I refute this. I refute you. I send back to you what you have sent to me. And then I saged and I Palo Santo'd, and then I forgave her and like, I let it go. And then it makes me angry that now, like in all my other work, because this person refused to be a big girl. Now I
have to
and get to be bigger.
Yes.
I'm already 6 feet tall. I already don't fit in cars. Like, I can't be bigger. Why? Right. Back to Paramount office. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, Oof. I mean, that is it. But I think building this companionship of big, scary people is maybe the way to go.
Yeah. And like being tall and like attracting each other.
That's exactly it. I mean, and I just think that, gosh, if people ever get anything from this conversation, I hope they do, is like going back to this idea, like, don't be intimidated, be inspired. Like when you see someone do the brave, courageous thing, like say, that means I can do it too. It
yeah.
doesn't mean I don't have that in me. It means no, it means go. Like, let people see into you, like do it, you know, and then drop what they think.
Everything is a constant choice. Like, I feel like sometimes I had thought in the past that I'm like, oh, the work will be done and I'll be a complete product and da 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 da. The work yeah, is never done and it's never over.
Done.
It's a spiral staircase and we're always growing and going. And I like to look at, like, again, like observing, like when intimidation comes, I'd be like, she didn't deserve that commercial. Da 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 da. I yeah. choose another term that I really love that I borrowed from the polyamory community, which yeah. is compersion, which oh. means taking joy in someone else's joy.
Compersion.
And it's always a choice, right? I could choose the lower vibration thought, I could go down or I could go
yeah.
up. And
yeah.
sometimes you go down and sometimes you go up, but I really do my best to always go up.
But then there's a trap, right? Because I think that that is the way to go. But then there's the days when the spoons are gone, when the tank is empty, when the fucks are out, and you don't do it. And then you beat your shit. You beat the shit out of yourself because you had that one moment where you just like...
Right. I just got an image of going to the pantry and you have like a really pretty glass canister that says fucks and it's all empty and it's you're all out of fucks.
No more
fucks. And all you have is like a banana or like an apple and you don't have the fucks that you want. By the way, I just want to share with everyone that I'm getting this like this fucks thing from the book, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. Also, I would love to know a fuck counter for this episode. We're got to be at like 25 fucks given. We got the fucks back. We got the fucks back in stock.
And we need to get fucks back. Like, we need a compersion about fucking.
Another piece that I extract from one of my favorite poems, Desiderata by Max Ehrman. It was a big thing in my family. And when you turn 16, you're given like a poster of it. And it's like a big, like good thing we all pass down through the family, et cetera. And there's a passage in that I really love, which is beyond a wholesome discipline, be gentle with yourself.
Yeah.
So some days you're not able to choose the high road. Some days the path of least resistance is the lower road. And I think it's important to honor both of them because that duality is what makes us dynamic.
I feel seen. I feel healed. I could carry this energy all day. You know what I mean? Like, it's true.
It's so easy to talk it.
We're human. But it's like the bird thing again. Like, we're animals too. Like, you get pushed at some point and you react. You know, you just get to the point where you're like, you know, like, stop it. I'm going to...
And every time she bit me, I stayed really calm as much as I could. I mean, the fifth time, not really, because I had to like shake her off of me because if I didn't, I would have been in urgent
this
care
is now
getting
becoming
stitches.
A whole bit in my head. You and the parrot and fighting her off and the sort of manners, like Miss Manners. You're Miss Manners with the parrot and no, you cannot bite me. And then I could see the parrot. You're just like now, like sort of into like a fist fight with the parrot. Like I'm a Muppet. Sorry. It's going all off in my head.
And like everything in me, like I had to like keep myself calm. And of course my brain is going like, kick her off. You're like, and I was like fighting with my brain while I'm fighting with a bird and I'm trying to be really gentle and take care of her and make sure she doesn't get hurt while she's giving me a wound.
Yeah. Yes.
But it's my fault. But I'm
right. Of course, it's your fault because how could you let that, that happen to you? I can't believe we still say shit like women say that to each other.
See, here's the thing. That was so infuriating to me because that was so mean of her to do that. And I think a part of me gets really upset because I spend a lot of time aware of my power and the power that I have over people. Like just for example, this student that reached out to me yesterday and needed advice. I could have responded and been like, I'm not available. And she didn't even ask for advice, but it was she sent an SOS and like, I was able to see that's what it was. So I could have been like, if you're going to reach out to me, reach out to my email. Don't reach out to my private Facebook account. I don't have the time or energy to deal with this now. But I was very aware of her feelings because she was vulnerable. So I get angry that more people don't realize how much power they have in their interactions. Because when you do the right thing, that is done in the privacy of your heart and your brain. And no one's going to come and reward you and give you a gold star sticker for being mature and not sending that email out of frustration.
Exactly. They're going to wait for the one moment you screwed up. And then, I know. But again, what other people think about me, it's none of my fucking business. That's the thing to say. So
I know when I'm working on like what people think about me is none of my business because you're not going to, not everyone's going to love you. And I think the more unicorns we are, like the more like Amazonian women we be, the more in both ways, there's going to be the people that are like, oh my gosh, like I didn't even know it was possible to live a life like this. And there's also going to be people that are like, because the more radiant you are, the more of a dichotomy there's going to be. So fine. Fucking go. You can't make everyone happy anyway. So be the you that you want to be because you're never going to please everybody.
I know. Lucy, girl, I know. That was a Lucy cry. I was like, ah!
Okay, no, oh totally God. The Lucy cry. Okay, so I wonder, as we're like starting to flirt with wrapping up, what kind of moral can we like, what kind of bow can we put on this? Like, where can we just set the table with like all of these amazing foods.
And I know.
Now what are we going to do with it for people?
Well, the minute you said we set the table, my mind instantly put us in like Provence at a big farm table and people coming in and out to the house and,
yes.
you know, and then we, I don't know, we...
And the breeze and the trees. Food
on
and
the yes, and then we go maybe and walk through the grapevines and get lost yes. and, you know, and...
And our dresses are amazing. Our hats are so yes. big. Like we and can't we walk side by side because our hats are too big.
And we just keep holding the table. We just keep laying out the goods. Oh, and we remember like that it's that. There. And we go there. We go back and we pour a glass of spumante or I don't know.
It's such a challenge to do it, let it go, and not monitor the engagement. Just like
yeah.
give the gift and surrender it.
Yeah.
Like set yeah. the table and walk away.
Yeah. Set the table, walk away, but also keep the candles lit. Keep yeah, the yeah, table yeah, yeah. full.
Keep the lamp light trimmed and burning. Keep your lamp nice. Light trimmed and burning.
yeah. And remember when your nervous system is chilled out from one of those episodes, that the table's there and that there are people that you like. You know, I think because one of the things that
there are people you like that like you.
Yeah. And you forget that because you get so burnt out by the ones that are, you're too tall. You're too pretty.
Yeah. You're too nice. Beautiful. You're too radiant.
You're too thoughtful. Yeah. So you get tired of those people. You're like, okay. Yeah, sure you do. And you forget that there's all the other people that are at the table, and that if you just would get away from that energy and go back to the nurturing one,
yeah.
that you'll be all right. You'll be all right. It'll pass.
I got some wisdom years ago that really resonates with me. I was emceeing an improv festival in Chicago. On that same night, one of my friendtors, Gary Austin, founder of the Groundlings, died. And it was like that same night, and I was a mess. And like, I was with some really like powerful people that I admire. And we were all like honoring Gary, and we all went out after and we were sharing stories. And it was like, it was a really beautiful moment. And towards the end of the night, I leaned into one of the people I like admired the most. And I was like, it gets so hard being a unicorn in a herd of horses. And he was like, yes, but we always find each other. Just look for the horns in the room. Mm-hmm. And I really carry that with me, that like we find each other, we see each other. So when you find and see those fellow unicorns, celebrate the fuck out of them. Because I also keep this idea, I call it the joy transaction. I endeavor to transact in joy and abundance with everything that I do, because my thought behind it, as I'm heart led and like love led in everything that I do. And I will say, when I don't feel lovey and happy, I take the afternoon off and I put myself in time out because I'm feeling like a big old bitch and I don't want to transact in this energy. So I endeavor to transact authentically in joy and abundance, because if I give as I can, when I need to get, when I need help, I feel confident being vulnerable and asking for it because I give so much.
Yeah. That is a thing we haven't talked about enough. That should be a whole episode, is being the unicorn. You end up giving a lot out, but you have to ask for help.
Which is a hard thing to do.
And sometimes because there's people that will not think you actually are capable of running out of energy. I'm sure you've experienced that. People are sort of shocked that you don't have endless supplies of it. Yeah.
We show up as like, nothing bothers me. I'm amazing. My career is going so well. Like but also that is still authentic as well. Like that is true. However, like underneath that mask, I always think of Inside Out. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on that you're not seeing underneath the package of I'm pretty and polished and eloquent and funny and quick to laugh. Like
exactly.
Which is authentic, but it takes work to be like that.
It sure does. It sure does. And yeah, that's it. And I think, you know, right before this podcast, when I was like, my day got a little bit disarrayed, and I'm like, the time's off, and I'm like, ah, and, you know.
And I reminded you to breathe, and I was like, everything's okay. Yeah.
Well, and then my daughter said something like, Jenny, if you didn't, mom, sorry, she didn't call me mom. She did. That's like a whole other story. No, she was like, it's good that you still get nervous when you're about to go do something like this, because it means, yeah, like, it's just this vulnerability theme is like crucial to be the person that can inspire some courage in others and bring some energy and joy to other people means that you are putting yourself in situations where all of that teeming emotion behind the scenes is like right at the surface, right? And you're like hoping that it's going to catapult you to perform and to bring your best self. But it could also, I mean, it's a lot. It's a force that gets you into the world, but it also, yeah, like there's just people out there that are going to see that you're being vulnerable, and they're going to say all those things that are like programmed in the world that you have to fight, like, don't stand out. Don't be the one who's always seen as the troublemaker. Don't be the one who, you know, it's like, no, like, I don't have to take your shit on. That's your shit.
Yeah. I have my own. I don't want yours too. Like, I just got mine off my shoe. I'm not stepping in yours.
Right. Like, yeah. Kindly use your own poop bags and take them off my property.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Clean up after your
Sheila,
poop.
Sheila, I meant to say, so I'm so happy that you chose the bullshit assortment. I've individually bagged each variation of bullshit for you.
Nice.
And
it
does come with a disclaimer that this bullshit is for personal use. It is not to be applied. It can only be applied to others with consent. So use your bullshit wisely. Thank you so
Don't
much for coming
Don't just fling
by.
Your poo. Okay.
I wanted to tie up and I realized this is a great example of improvisation. It's important to allow yourself to say whatever like flicks up to you. But sometimes I hear things that I say as I'm saying it and I still double down and commit to it. Like when I called it like the fuck shop. I was very aware, like, because my face shows like, oh no, but I'm like, why do I have to practice what I preach and go with the first thing that comes out?
Like,
and unfortunately, it also sounds very problematic and it could be, you know, whoops-a-doodle. Well, thank you so much.
It's not. It needs to be said. You know, the fuck shop is a genius invention, and I'm going to be shopping there more. In fact, I wish that they would install another fuck shop at the corner up here in this little town, but, you know, no one's been willing to take it over since COVID. So.
I love it. Thank you so much for this very special episode. I appreciate that Mark sees that we had like
by the seashore.
We had like 100% that we had this like magical connection that we both lit the fuck up. That's probably fuck number 33. That we both lit the fuck up when we saw each other. Because so often I feel like a lonely unicorn. And this is what I emailed you immediately after. I was like, oh my God, this is nice to be here. I collaborate with you.
No, and I felt the same way. And I, you know, I'm glad that Mark kept it going because in the semester, like, takes me over and I'm like, oh, great. I'm glad we're doing this. The minute he said so, I was like, yeah.
100%.
I'm all in. Yeah. Yeah,
well,
no.
Listeners,
it was fun. Thanks
you
for having me on.
Yeah. And listeners, thank you so much as well. I hope that you got some great reflections and some nutrients to chew on and pick apart and digest. And I hope that you find your power and say fuck it to the people who try to take it away from you.
Yes. And don't fling your poo at people without consent.
And don't fling your, don't not, yeah, that's correct. Awesome. Thank you so much, everyone.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that. I would love to hear your thoughts on it. That is mark@philosophyimprov.com, or just put a comment on the blog post associated with this episode at philosophyimprov.com or partiallyexaminedlife.com or on any of the social media outlets where I posted about this. The time of the year has come where I have to think about what we're going to do for this podcast for season 6. That is starting at the end of the summer, as if a new school year mattered to the schedule of a podcast. I may well put the show on hiatus. I may find a different co-host to explore this format with over the next year. Maybe if Mary wants to stick around, we add additional semi-regular co-hosts like Jenny, Or maybe, and this is one of the ideas that I dangled at Jenny and Mary in setting up this episode, they would just want to do a season with Jenny essentially taking my place. Or heck, there could be a combination of those things. Maybe they want to go off and do their own thing that has nothing to do with me while I proceed with this show in some other way. So even under ordinary circumstances, as I've often said on this show, when we finish an episode, I don't know if it was any good, and I don't know if it's appropriate for the normal Partially Examined Life audience, or if it should have a different audience. How would I possibly reach such another audience, right? If you are a philosophy diehard and you're disappointed that this didn't have, you know, concrete discussion of Simone de Beauvoir or Marcuse or something, maybe this is the kind of show that you would want to refer some of your non-philosophy friends to. All that is to say that I look forward to your feedback in helping me decide what to do next and in giving these very smart ladies some encouragement. I mean, if you say mean things, I'm probably not going to pass the feedback on to them. But I do want to hear what you actually think, whether this has connected with you. Now, I announced at the end of our last episode that I have made almost everything on the Patreon page, that's patreon.com/philosophyimprov, open to the public. So all the formerly paywalled post-game after-talk segments and just the ability to listen to this podcast free of the annoying ads. Now, why would I give up that small amount of ad revenue? Well, it's because I want you to actually have to do something to show that you positively want this show to continue to be made. And of course, when you get to Patreon, you have the option of giving us a little per month or per episode donation. But I know people feel nickel and dime. They don't want to pay for entertainment. So I'm not even requiring that. To repeat, following us on patreon.com/philosophyimprov is entirely free at this point, and it will get you access to our nearly 5 years of episodes of this, some interviews with world famous philosophers, with people you've seen on TV. And with a few clicks, you can still experience that through whatever podcast app you would like, including Spotify, which was not previously an option. So thanks to Mary and Jenny for indulging in this experiment. Thanks to you, the listeners, without whom we should not do any of this recording. And thanks especially to anybody who has financially supported any of my shows, who has gone on to Apple Podcasts and given nice 5-star ratings, maybe with reviews, to this or any of my shows. To those who have been with us for a decade or more of doing this, and also to those of us who are just joining the community now, I'm so glad to have you. I'd love to hear from you individually. Again, mark@philosophyimprov.com. Thanks. Bankrupt.